Racing fans, it's 8 o'clock on Tuesday night, and it's time for another edition of the Burn 'em Down Podcast. I'm Greg Dreiss, your host. The Burn 'em Down Podcast is the official podcast of Rolling Thunder Racing Series, along with the Rolling Thunder Money Race, which is a once a month money race put on by Rolling Thunder. And there's a big one coming up next week we want to talk about, or next month we want to talk about. That's the Battle of the Teams, November 16th at 7 p.m. at Daytona. Gen 4 cars, winner takes all. Teams of four, $125 to get in. Grand prize is $1,000. So, probably didn't win the $1.5 billion in the lottery, but yeah, that's only $2. But let me tell you, the Battle of the Teams is a lot better odds than the lottery. So, if you want some information on that, check them out at RollingThunderRacingSeries.com. That's the Battle of the Teams, November 16th, 7 p.m. at Daytona. Gen 4 cars, and we'll go over some of the information later on. And time is running out to join. So that's the Battle of the Teams. For more information and to register before November 1st, RollingThunder.com Racing Series. It's already 3 weeks into the new season at Rolling Thunder Racing Series, and we're going to be checking out the results at Watkins Glen, my favorite track where Rolling Thunder raced this past weekend. And we're here at the Week 3 Driver Spotlight. We've got the couple of the winners from Watkins Glen. We have Daniel Eberhardt. He drives the car number 90. He was the winner pretty decisively with over a 14-second lead over second-place car driven by Dylan Jones. He drives the number 3, and those are our two guests for tonight. Welcome, Daniel, and welcome, Dylan, to your podcast here.
Thank you for having me.
Is there a delay? Okay, can you guys hear me better now? Test 1, 2, 3.
Gotcha.
All right. Yeah, it's definitely something on that server. So we're back over on my other side here. Well, anyway, welcome, guys, and congratulations on a pretty strong performance there, Daniel. How did you manage to win by 15 seconds at Watkins Glen this week?
The key thing is we're not like a, you know, we're not like NASCAR and, no, we didn't have any cautions, so that makes a big difference when you can, you know, hit a bunch of laps and just the eventful race for me trying to get through lap cars and people on the racetrack that. Just a big variety. It's road course racing. Not everybody is cut out for it, including myself. I'm pretty slow when it comes to the bigger names of this game, and it's just really just all about hitting your marks.
I always ask everybody that races on a road course. A lot of times you hear that slower is better, and once you get in that rhythm, it makes it a lot easier. If you spin out or have to slow down for a lapped car or slow down for a wreck, how quickly can you get back into that rhythm? And is it a situation where it's kind of hard sometimes to get back into the rhythm?
Oh, most definitely. It's so tough. There was a mistake I did through the bus stop where if you go in a little too deep, it's almost like it lands on the frame of the front end of the race car. So, and it's like it bottoms out. So I went off in there real deep and just shoved all the way through the grass and shoved the nose into the grass. And that's when Colin got around me on that first run to lead that one lap he did. It's just insane how easy it is to miss your marks just when somebody's chasing you, or just even in road course racing period. It's all about hitting the mark at the same point at the same time each and every lap. It's not as forgiving as running oval.
Got it. And where do you find your most challenging part of Watkins Glen?
Oof. The easiest point is probably the carousel coming out of the bus stop. I would say the hardest point's probably up through the S's, or maybe turn one. Turn one, you come down that long straightaway, you're having so much speed. If you shift up to fourth, you know, some people were staying in third. I was staying in third, but the longer the run, I stayed in third gear. I didn't even go to fourth. But if you shift up to fourth, it's so hard to get this car to whoa up. So probably turn one up through the S's, that's really difficult.
I would say I'd kind of have to agree with that. And if you go over to the runoff area coming out of turn one, it's not really a straight line back onto the track, because there's so many times I just run that along the outside of the runoff, and then you get that 1 point for driving off the track, because it just, there's that little point at the end where it just seems to it catches you for that black flag, or that not the black flag, but the 1 point for running off right there, because you don't see it, but I usually catch that quite a bit.
Yeah, most definitely. It's a lot harder to and it's also a lot harder to keep your momentum up going that far off the track.
Yes.
If you notice, a lot of people in real life, they do it, but for some reason in iRacing, it's not as fast to go all the way off the rumble strip right there and get onto that pavement and then come shooting back across the rumble strip like they do in real life. It's like it has a disadvantage.
Yeah, that's true. Dylan, how did you find Watkins Glen? Do you like road courses, and how does it compare to other ones you run?
Overall, I'm not a road course guy. I definitely don't dip my toe into that end very often, but for the oval side, whenever we run the road courses, I would say Watkins Glen is by far my favorite. I guess a lot of people would say it's probably an easier road course compared to most. It's a lot of momentum, high speed, not really much braking points except for into turn one and the last couple of corners. So I like Sonoma too, as long as I keep it on the cup side. I hate the alternate version they were running for a little bit there.
Gotcha. It's funny that you said Watkins Glen is, I think a lot of people perceive that as an easy course. And I know I take it for granted sometimes that, you know, I perceive it as an easy course, but it can certainly ruin your day, because there's a lot of turns on there where you can, the bus stop turn one, the S's, and even by the Jackie Stewart grandstand, which is turn 10 on the full course. I think it's not that on the short track, but it's the last one before you come into the final turn to go down the main stretch. So where do you find your most difficult or challenging part of Watkins Glen?
Turn one is definitely the easiest place to screw up, because you want it to drive it in deep. Every time you went down there, you felt like you could go deeper. And if you try, you're probably just going to kill yourself. But I would say to pick up the most speed was going through the bus stop. Because if you hit that thing just right, you're ripping on your lap. And if you miss it, you lose a lot of speed. So turn one, you could throw away the race there, but the bus stop definitely was where everyone was keeping speed and making their lap times.
Yeah. Before you hit the bus stop, how fast are you going on that straight there?
Oh, Rick, I have no clue.
No, just bringing it up, because a couple of years ago, my son and I went up to the 6 hours of the Glen when IMSA was up there. And we had tickets, and I entered the WeatherTech contest, which they got you into the hospitality suite for the day, the tent right there around by that final turn before you come to the stretch. And we won it, and I got a chance to go around in the new Toyota Supra on that track. And it was so funny. I mean, it was so hilarious, exhilarating. I was laughing all the way, and the driver was narrating. And as we're going through the S's, 115, 120, we hit that straightaway. And just before the bus stop, he says, we're doing 145. He hits the brakes and downshifts into the bus stop, and within 2 seconds, we're doing 80. And the G-forces were incredible. So that's why I ask if you knew that, because to go from 145 to 80 or 85 in a matter of a couple seconds is pretty insane in a small car. And it was the street version, souped up a little bit. We had no helmets, no roll cage or anything, but it was fun.
Man, that sounds pretty nutty. I know when you make the first ride, I was aiming to get 110, because I checked mm-hmm. what some of the fast guys are doing in practice and what they're slowing down to make sure I was trying to get through there at that speed. So we dropped to 110. So,
got it. So how did you think your performance did from Sunday night at the Glen?
I was pretty happy. The first run, I thought tires were going to matter a lot more. So I saved pretty heavy. I thought we were going to get way looser than we did. Because at the start of the run, it was pretty loose. But as we went on through the run, it kind of got tight. Except up through the S's, we stayed loose the whole time. So the first run, I gave up 6 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how much, you know, I was saving. I don't know how much. Those guys were definitely faster than me. But, I saved tires hard, and I really didn't start running better lap times than them until the last 5 laps on the tires. I was, like, 3/4 tenths quicker, but at that point, it didn't matter. So I was fighting an uphill battle the rest of the race just to make sure I was in position at the end.
Okay, so you did manage to lead a lap then, I understand, correct?
Maybe. I didn't know. I hope so. That's some bonus points right there.
Ah, cool. So, Daniel, let's talk about your racing history a little bit. How old were you when you went to your first racetrack? What got you into it? Did you catch the bug right away, or did it take a while?
I grew up in it. My whole family, me included, I've raced race cars and go-karts and everything growing up. My grandpa was probably 2 when I watched him race. Mm-hmm. And then my dad raced, and then around 12 to 13, I got in a go-kart, and then around 14, 15, I got into a dirt street stock, and then I went to a dirt late model for about a year. So, been around it my whole life. I've been iRacing since I was 2009, so the sim's been around since 07, so I've been iRacing since 2009, and been on here a long time. Time coming for me.
Now, were those dirt tracks out in Wisconsin where you are, or did you grow up somewhere else?
Oh, no, I race. I'm from Georgia.
So, oh, you're from Georgia. Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I've
been running around, but when I was in go-karts, that was more traveling and stuff. Car racing, you know, mm-hmm. you kind of just obligated to run one track. You don't get really to travel with those. You know, around here in the South, they don't have like rules where you can go to every track. Every track's got their own set of rules. So it's a lot harder just to pack up and go. But go-kart racing, you had WKA rules. So you can go run around anywhere and race. And I ran dirt go-karts for probably a year and a half, I believe.
And what's the series that you did the best in or win?
Yeah, I was a state champion in the Maxxis, and then a national champion in Maxxis Tour. In the Maxxis Tour, it was called that back then. They had like the Big Daddy, the Max Daddy, and the national championship. It was at Neenah, South Carolina. I don't even think that's a track anymore. So, I've been around South Carolina, and Florida, racing North Carolina, Alabama, and Tennessee. So I've been all around.
Well, congratulations on national championship. That's certainly something to talk about there.
Yeah, it is.
And what's your favorite on iRacing? What's your favorite series and car to drive?
Ooh, okay. I love 2013 Cup cars, the Gen 6. Right when they first came out, not the new style, the Camaro. I liked them. What was it? The Chevy SS and the Ford Fusion, Toyota Camry. I like those style cars with a lot of horsepower, 850 horsepower. Very fun to drive when they came about. I'm a big fan. If you want me to go oval racing, I'm a big fan of a Bristol. I like the multi grooves definitely with the updates they've had from year after year. When I first came about and Bristol came about, it was all top line heavy, hard to pass, but now you can get the bottom rolling and get the top rolling. So it's all about saving your stuff. So big fan of Bristol. I do like, you know, me being from Georgia, I go to Talladega, Daytona. in real life in Atlanta. Yeah. So I love the Atlanta Super Speedway, what they got there. It's like an old style, kind of new style Super Speedway, like has old Daytona vibes where the pack's not all on top of each other the whole time. So it's pretty fun once the tires wear out. It's a fun racetrack to drive. Definitely an iRacing. I do like Super Speedway racing a lot just because I feel like it's your chance to run against the big dogs of iRacing. I've been doing podium 500s, won that, and stuff like that. So it's just I like the Super Speedway side of racing, but I do love getting back to like the roots of it and running short tracks and, you know, Watkins Glen, stuff like that. I love it. Tests your skill level, you know. That's what these tracks do. Super Speedway racing, everybody can just about do it if they know how to hold a straight line, hold the throttle wide open.
Yep, anybody can drive fast on a straightaway. What about you, Dylan? What's your history with racing?
Well, not as cool as Daniel. Nobody really in my family ever did anything with racing.
No kidding.
I probably got hooked on it probably from video games. You know, I remember playing like NASCAR 99, 98 would probably be the earliest for me on the old PlayStation.
Yep.
And then I think that probably just kind of carried over to watching the real stuff. And being a kid, I think I got attracted Jeff Gorn's little rainbow car there.
Yep.
I became a fan of him and really just been doing that ever since. And that's how I got brought into it, really.
So if you're a little kid and you're into racing, but nobody else in your family is sowing that interest, like taking you a track or getting you an RC car or a little go-kart, how do you keep the interest? How do you keep that zeal for it up?
Competitiveness, I think. I was always a competitive person, so, and I kind of like the racing scene because in a little bit you're in control of your own destiny, a lot of it.
Yep.
You know, especially on the simulation side of stuff, you know, run a fixed setup if you want, you know, if you're sucking, it's your fault, not somebody else's.
Because you're all driving the same car.
Yep.
So, have you ever done anything close to real racing, including street racing, and not getting caught by the cops on a Saturday night?
No, I'm a goody two-shoes. We don't do that.
Okay.
No, I even go-karts, they ain't nothing but stuff you go to the local little amusement park and you know, full throttle through the corners.
Yep.
That's the extent of my real-life racing. I've been video games. Yep. Since day one.
That's about the extent of mine, too. Did you mention, like, the little amusement park? So it's got the little gasoline lawnmower engine on the back with the pull start that the guy starts you.
And then the guy in front of you's got the one that got tuned up a little bit, and you're like, bam, I'm getting beat by this guy.
Yep. You ever do any of the indoor racing at the local malls with the electric open-wheel style?
No, because I live in the sticks, so the closest place like that is probably like 3 hours away from me.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, not a lot of fun where I'm from.
Oh, I thought I lived in the sticks. Yeah, it's New York, but I'm in the middle of nowhere. I live in a town of 7,000 people, 9,000 if you include the inmates at the two jails. We're famous for an exit on the thruway and a virus, and that's about it. But kind of like it. So when did you start iRacing?
2012. I'd started a little bit earlier. You know, I played all the EA Sports games or racing games, and then when they quit doing it, and I guess Activision kind of took over making them, and then those became the worst racing games in history, I think.
Yep.
And at that point in my life, I was trying to be more of a competitive gamer, so it was all about online for me, and those games had none available, and obviously went looking for other options online, and you know, you kept watching the YouTube videos, you know, back then Dale Jr.
Yeah,
pushing iRacing, and like, damn, that looks like a lot of fun. But you know, then you looked at the price tag as a kid and you're like, oh, how am I gonna afford that, Dad? Can I borrow the credit card?
Yep, that's what happened to me.
But I got it for like a month, you know, started with an Xbox controller. I've won like my first five races, you know, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then I saved up my money and got a G29 wheel.
Yep.
Got the membership.
Mm-hmm.
and been playing it since 2012 nonstop, pretty much.
Are you any of you, either one of you guys, addicted to upgrading your rigs with the latest bells and whistles?
Well, since 2012, I've had a G29 until like last week.
Okay.
A Moza.
See, I don't feel bad. I've had a G29 since I started about 7 years ago. I just upgraded the pedals to Club Sport about a year ago, and oh my gosh, what a difference.
I'm still running the G29 stock pedals. I bought some expensive pedals, but I really can't get used to them.
Oh, really?
I mean, you know how toy-like the G29s are.
Yeah.
When you step into the big boy pedals, and I just haven't had the patience, you know, to take the time.
Oh, I understand.
They're definitely better, but they're a little learning process, and I haven't taken that on yet.
Well, you're obviously doing pretty well being in second place there at Watkins Glen, and you don't even like road courses. So, cheers for the G29 pedals and wheel. We only had to change the pedals once, and my son got into it when he was 13 with the little thing that he clamped on the dining room table, the $35 wheel and pedal set from Amazon, and borrowing my laptop. And then all of a sudden I get an email from iRacing that I've been suspended for 30 days. And I'm like, Sam, what's that racing game you do? He goes, iRacing, why? And I go, why am I suspended? He says, oh, I kind of just blew somebody off the track and they reported me. And I'm like, well, why is it my name? He goes, it's your credit card. I go, oh, thanks a lot.
Oh, there you go.
So then we moved down. We bought an open wheel set, got the G29 or G27, one of those two, and set it up, still racing, sitting on the floor with a 19-inch laptop. And then we bought a bigger TV, and I built a bigger rig, and I got some Cheez-It fenders off a NASCAR car along the side and everything else. So it's like it's insane. So, Daniel, what type of rig you race with?
G920, I think. I got the G29 of the Xbox version of that, and then I've had Fanatec pedals, the CSL Elites, for about 10 years now. So I don't even run force feedback. Everybody out there, the force feedback heroes now with these new wheels. I hate force feedback because I've drove real cars, and it does is, to me, put what your butt feels in your hands. And to me, if I ever get the chance to drive a car again, I don't want it to throw me off to where I'm trying to feel in the wheel what I'm feeling in my butt. So I don't run it.
That makes sense.
It's all visuals.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. iRacing's great for the visuals.
Yep.
Everything else, it's subpar. I don't try to dish on it as much. Like, there's a lot they could fix, like dynamic tracks and stuff like that, where the track comes and goes, the tire falls off. But you don't even have that in real life anymore. So me and Dylan, you know, we've, like I said to you earlier before we started the podcast, we've known each other for 12 years.
Yeah.
And we've been through, you know, the thick of it together.
Yeah.
From dynamic tracks, all of that, where the game was just, I mean, if they touched it just a little bit, it was perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect. But now it's to the point where we're all locked down. We're all running the same. There's really no fall off anymore. Anything you change, there's not much to it. I know they're still working on that to get it back to what it was. You know, there was like a lawsuit or something where they got rid of the dynamic tracks because it was copyright to another thing. So I don't know how all that works, but I know they put it out there, and I think me and Dylan are holding on to that little bit of hope that maybe it changes, you know, maybe we'll get back to that. But then I think about it, and you watch real life racing, they're all hammered down, wide open every single lap. You know, there's really no talent to it anymore. And I think that's what kind of has killed the sim for me lately.
Yeah.
No talent. You beat me. I must have less talent.
Didn't mean it on the sim. I'm talking about real life.
Okay.
So, Daniel, you're obviously, it sounds like you're not a fan of the next gen, either on iRacing or NASCAR then, huh?
I'm not. It's not that I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I love racing.
I got
a buddy that will scream and look at you and just, I went to Bristol with him and he hates it. Every bit of it. Hate. Went there to watch Dale Jr. race a couple weeks ago. He hates it. Can't stand it. He thinks it's the dumbest thing since sliced bread. You know, and I love sliced bread. So just hates it. And, you know, I've been a race fan my whole life. I can go to a local dirt track. I can go watch dirt bikes. I'm just a race fan. Motorsports runs through my blood, and I love it. But I get where he's coming from. I don't care to see somebody shifting, not a cup driver. It's not what I grew up. It's not never in my life.
Interesting.
From 99.
Yeah.
Have they been shifting? You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's kind of ruined it. And I feel like you can't make a mistake anymore, because when you make a mistake, he grabs the gear and gets it back going. So it just helps him. So I don't dislike it, but I don't like it. Yeah. I don't want to say I hate it.
Yeah.
Just wish the suits up top, the guys wearing the big suits, I wish you could go up there and have a conversation with them, because I want to know where they get their statistics from about how people love it and stuff like that. It just feels more like watching WWE wrestling.
You know, I can see where you're coming from on that, because it's like right after the race is done, you know, I'm scrolling through Facebook and the social media, and then the NASCAR Facebook page will put up something about, you know, whatever guy won, and then all of a sudden here come all the Toyota haters. Well, they only want Toyota to win. Do you think it's more that people are just keyboard warriors and just want to get on and start hating on stuff, or we're just dumbed down because it's become more entertainment than an actual, you know, Saturday night at the dirt track where you got to really know how to drive?
I think too much money got involved. I think it got to a point to where NASCAR was on top of the world when Dale Jr., Tony Stewart, Jeff Gordon, you know, and the passing of Dale Earnhardt just led the sport in a whole different atmosphere, and Dale Jr. took it over, you know. So
got it.
I think the world is changing. I think people don't want to watch a race that lasts 4 hours anymore like used to.
Yep.
You'd go, and we go to the Daytona 500, me and my wife do, and we'll sit there and watch every bit of it. But there's people who get up and leave. I mean, they leave. They're like, this isn't for me, or they're just not there. I think the way it is that everything's getting too long. Me and Dylan had a conversation the other day about NFL football. I don't know. I guess more people want to watch it from home, maybe. But to me, it's just sports in general. They're losing their luster to me. Like, not everybody wants to go do it anymore. Like, I don't know if it's just, you know, the millennial or the zoomer way of showing what life is and stuff like that. I mean, video games even have taken a little bit of a drop to me. Like, it's not as popular.
Interesting.
I don't know if I'm looking at the wrong stuff or what, but I feel like sports and video games are just dying a little bit in general. I don't know what people are out there doing, but I sure love to figure it out.
They're sitting on their phones. I mean, when you go to Watkins Glen or you go to a concert, and I've been to a lot of concerts. My youngest, he asked me one day, he goes, what was so great about the 80s? He was 14 years old. I said, son, sit down, I'll get you a beer. I can't have a beer. I said, don't tell your mother. We're going to talk about the 1980s. And then he got me saying, well, what about the music? Oh, the music was great. And I said, the 80s were one of those generations where if you had a full-time job, you could have a nice car, a nice apartment, or a small house. And if you went out on a Friday night and you spent $20, you had one heck of a good time. Now $20 is a couple craft beers, the tax, and not even the tip. So we started going to a bunch of the concerts from all the bands in the 80s. And when I went to a concert, you went to a concert. You got there, you partied a little bit, whatever your method of partying was, and you sat there, and you rocked out for the concert. Now, just like you said, people are getting up, they're walking around. I'm at Bethel Woods for the 50-year reunion of Woodstock, and Skinner's on the stage. And it's like half the place is empty. Everybody's out walking around and doing whatever they do. So, yeah, I think you're onto something there. But definitely you hit a point when you said you're still with your G27 wheel because you know how to drive a car. So you don't need the fancy equipment to do iRacing because of all your experience doing the real stuff, it sounds like.
Yeah, I know. I got off topic there. I get a little frustrated when it comes to the sport. I love the, you know, going down in shambles. But I would tell anybody that you don't need a good steering wheel is what you need are good pedals. And I would suggest the Elite pedals. I don't suggest the V3s. I have V3s that sit in my closet. Uh-huh. I don't like them. I hate a Fanatec V3. I don't know why people love them. But I love the CSL Elite pedals, and they just came back out with them. All I think you need is a load cell brake. You don't need a heavy throttle. Mm-hmm. I did change my clutch, little clutch spring throttle just to give me a heavier throttle, so it's harder to push down to control it better. You know, when you're trying to get up to mm-hmm. speed and coming off a corner, so you're not spinning the tires or anything like that. If I was to suggest to some new guy right now, I would say do the thing where you go and buy either a Logitech or a Thrustmaster that come with the pedals. Mm-hmm. And then if you're good at it, because I'll be honest with you, people who get into gaming, it's still at the end of the day, it's a video game. It's true. A simulator, but it's still a video game. If you go home and play controllers all day long, that kid who gets on there and runs and plays Call of Duty or plays NASCAR Thunder 2003 growing up and stuff like that, and he's really good at it,
yeah,
most likely he's going to get behind the wheel and figure it out pretty quick.
Yeah,
it's just kind of, it comes natural. Dylan was the first to know that. You know, he got on here with a controller and was winning. I got on here with a Driving Force Logitech. It was called a Driving Force. It's blue and black. I got it when I was probably 5 years old.
Oh,
finally,
wow.
Irison came around and I hooked it up. And to be honest with you, it was broken. Like the center of it, I had to tie it down. I took, you know, the little clamps. I took them out when I was real little. So I had to tie it down with like yarn string that I grew up living with my grandparents. And
oh, man.
My grandma did yarn. So I tied it around a little, like a stool that you put up at a bar and put the steering wheel on there, raced on a laptop for the first three races and won my first ever one. So I don't know. It's just, I think if you're going to get into it, take the cheap route. You can do it with your laptop. You can run a single screen, and I have three screens now, but that's all I suggest is if you really want to get out there and get into it, it is expensive, but in the long run, it's pretty worth it.
Cool. So Dylan, what would, have you tried VR, and what do you run, one screen or three?
I do have a VR headset. I only turned it on iRacing once, and it was okay. I didn't like the reduced graphics.
Okay.
I can see if they can get the visuals a little bit better.
Yep.
It's probably the future. I've always ran triples. I am currently on a 49-inch Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the 49-inch. But when you've had triples, that little bit of real estate on the left and right that you're missing from this 49 is really helpful a lot of times, you know?
Yeah.
So the 49 is, it's good. It's better than a single 27. Mm-hmm. But for, like, serious, triples is still the way to go. Although, I guess Samsung, they did come up with a 57-inch version.
Yes, they did.
Of this.
Yep.
Which might be interesting. Because you only need a little bit more just so you could see that car to your outside.
That's true.
You can't quite see it with this.
Yeah.
So
the 49, obviously, it's a curved screen, correct?
Yep, 49 okay. curved.
Now, how tall is that? Because I was looking online for some gaming screens, and I found one that's like, oh, this one looks pretty good. But the thing was only like 13 inches tall, and I run a single screen TV, I think a 42-inch, that is... You know, it's a lot. I don't know the exact dimensions, but it's a lot taller than 13 inches. Is yours kind of short and wide, or is it got a good height to it as well?
Yeah, they're definitely shorter than like I got a 24-inch just sitting off to the side of it.
Yeah,
and it's probably 3 inches shorter than it.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. How long did it take to get used to a shorter screen?
I really didn't notice that part of it, honestly.
Wow.
So I feel like that's not too big of an issue on here. I don't know.
Okay.
And I feel probably do like almost side by side, but it wasn't like a thing. I turned it on. It was like, oh, this is way different.
Yeah. Interesting. So what's your take on force feedback?
I never ran force feedback until last week when I got this wheelie.
Okay.
I got on and, you know, kind of got mentored by a guy that I joined his league and he never ran force feedback. And I spent a lot of time chasing him around the track trying to learn, you know.
Got it.
That's kind of how I learned is found somebody faster than me, and he was able to take me under his wing, mm-hmm. and he taught me. Finally, at one point, the student was teaching the master at one point.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But, yeah, and even with, now that I got force feedback, I don't, mm-hmm. it didn't make me no faster. I could probably go, I could turn the force feedback off on the wheel right now, and it wouldn't make a difference to me. Just how I learned to drive on here, and it's kind of actually how I prefer it. But it's kind of weird when you run these direct drive wheels with no force feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's almost they're too smooth compared to running the gear drives on the G29s and G27s.
Yep.
It almost gives you like a tactile feel, and it's almost a little bit easier than running no force feedback on direct drive. It's kind of weird.
I never run an open setup, always the fixed sets, because I don't know what I'm doing when I get into the garage. It's just like if I went out to started fixing cars, I know enough to damage your car and get myself arrested with stuff. So I like steering to be a little on the tight side, even no matter what track I'm on. I just don't like a loose wheel. How do you feel about where do you set your wheel, loose or on the tight side?
It's definitely light. Like, this is sitting at 2 on the force feedback in game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and obviously when you run the G29 with no force feedback, it's pretty light. The lighter I kept the wheel, the lighter I kept my hands on the steering wheel, which caused me to drive smoother. If I kept a tight steering wheel, I felt like I made more jerky reactions to things. Obviously that's bad. So it taught you to keep a loose grip on the wheel and
mm-hmm.
stay calm, I guess, you know?
No, that makes sense. It's kind of like on the old Daytona track with all the bumps in the road. You try to hold on to that, with that wheel too tight, you're going to break your hand. And you're right, it does make for a much more jerky motion. Daniel,
was another reason for not running force feedback on the G29s, because I felt like, you know, it's such bad technology that the force feedback it was giving you was so lagged behind what was actually happening.
Oh, okay.
You were probably reacting to stuff that already happened, you know, even if it's milliseconds back, you know, it's got to be hurting you, right?
Oh, yeah, at 150 miles an hour, everything is all about time. So, Danny, how do you like your steering setup?
Yeah, I back when I first came around and was running with Jones, I ran like, I ran like 100 centering spring or 110, whatever it goes up to max.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm over there like stalling on it. You know, I didn't run force feedback, but I ran the wheel really tight. And then about 2 years ago, I'm like, Dylan, I ain't going to do this no more, man. I can't take it anymore. It's like wearing you out after 50 laps. I'm like, this is not worth it. And he's like, dude, I run like 20 centering spring. I put it down to 20. It's almost like running with a dead wheel. And I'm like, dude, this is so much better. It was amazing, the changes. It helped me. And honestly, Dylan probably is mad at me because in about the 2 years, I went from running about probably 10 car lengths off of him to now 10 car lengths ahead of him. So he hates me for that.
I've just gotten old.
Oh, now I'm the old guy. Don't forget that. So what are you guys' plans for Atlanta this coming Sunday with 132 laps there? How are you gonna run that?
Oof. I'll be honest with you. I don't try to overthink it. Mm-hmm. I tell Dylan all the time, I don't like getting in there and practicing. Like, I know Justin puts up a lot of these practice rooms and stuff, and grateful for it. But I don't want to go in there and overthink it. When you overthink it, mm-hmm. there's too much on the line. It's anybody's race because you got 3 sets of tires. Yeah. If you save a set and the cautions fall your way, like Las Vegas, it fell those, you know, the guys way at one. I mean, they had the extra set left. And they also, you know, if you run like 10 laps longer than me or 3 laps, 4 laps longer, and I short pitch you, it's going to hurt me in the long run. So there's a lot of head games that can be played. It's more strategy than anything. If you're decently pacing yourself and staying about top 5 to top 7, and you're about 2 seconds off of, you know, the leader, and you're coming around for pit stops, and you save that set of tires, you'll be golden at the end of this thing if a caution falls your way. So it's all about that, really, truthfully. There's going to be a lot of different winners each and every week, I feel like. Watkins Glen, I don't know if we even have another road course. That was kind of my time to shine because I feel like I can run up front, and Dylan also felt like he could run up front. So it's just so hard to know what to do strategy wise because you're danged if you do and danged if you don't, taking tire wise.
Makes sense. Where do you like to qualify? Do you like to be up front and stay up front, or kind of sit in the back, see how the race develops, and then make your charge from there when it's time to go?
I like qualifying on, you know, first. I like to be dominant, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I like dominating the race. It's really hard to, though, because, you know, you don't know how hard to push it.
Right.
You want to save tires, but then you also got a shorter fuel tank, so 14 gallons, I believe. I think we have 75% fuel in the mm-hmm. car, so there's a lot of strategy to running behind somebody and watching him push himself, because if you see him slipping a little bit,
yep.
that means his tires are scrubbing off a little bit more than yours. So I kind of like starting around sixth or seventh and trying to pass a couple guys and see how hard everybody's running. Who was it last week? I don't know if he was there at Watkins Glen. I think that Justin Turner, he was ripping. That dude was flying. I don't know what he had in that thing, but he was hauling the mail around that track at Vegas. So, yeah, and he was pushing real hard. So, like mm-hmm. Dylan, he's very methodical. If you ever watch the races, you'll see that Dylan's going to give you 110%, but he's not going to push the car any more than the 100% that car needs to be pushed. So that's why I love Dylan's driving and mentality. Me, I'm going to give it all it's got and then some. I'm going to try to outwheel you and deal you
yeah.
if I can, but it really falls flat on my face at the end of these things. That's why he's always laughing at me.
That's funny. Dylan, what are your plans for Atlanta this weekend?
See if the Harvick line works. Haven't ran the old Atlanta for quite a while, but I know mm-hmm. when we used to run the high horsepower Gen 6, the old Harvick line running low in the front straightaway, really early entries actually helped the cars back then. So I'm wondering if with these Gen 4s and the high horsepower too, if running that line will help us out here, and how much the tires wear. Like Daniel said, with this, the shorter feel, it's a little bit harder to save your stuff because you can drive really hard and the tires might not fall off to like the last five laps of that fuel run.
Mm-hmm.
So it really can be a balancing act on, you need to drive harder than you maybe even think you want to, because the tires won't fall off as much, not being able to go the full fuel run. So
yeah,
I'm sure it'll be strategy, just like Las Vegas kind of turned into. Hopefully mine goes better than Las Vegas did. I didn't make it past the start finish line.
Oh,
don't
no.
Don't start first gear, guys. It's not good.
Ugh. So what are your plans for qualifying? You going to try to get the pole, or do you want to do what I like to do, kind of qualify in the middle or towards the back and see how everybody goes?
Usually I like qualifying in the back, but
mm-hmm.
a little bit more competitive thing here. So I'm going to try to qualify up as high as I can and see what happens.
There you go. And where do you hope to be at the end of the season?
P1. I mean, I gotta be P1, right?
Yeah, because if you're P2, you're the first loser, right?
I can't have that. That's Daniel's spot.
I was just gonna say, because he's gonna want P1 the way it sounds.
Yeah. I just want it to be a good season. I want Justin Ride Out, the owner of Rolling Thunder, to be successful in this, even in this money
yep.
series and
yep.
you know, everything he's doing. He's a great guy. I mean, just hands down, you know, props to him for putting this on. I mean, mm-hmm. First season doing this for him, just very thankful and gracious for him, you know, what he's doing. It's crazy how much money and time and effort he's putting into this, and you know, I'm just I want it to go successful, no matter if I finish first, second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I just want it to go successful for him, and there'll be many more years to come running this. So I don't want it to be a one and done for him.
Right.
I want it to all work out, and hopefully he'll be around a long time.
Well, it's definitely a unique league for being the first season, and you know, there's money every week. There's a money race once a month, and it's a pretty good paycheck if you can, you know, hit the money spots every week. And I can speak from experience the amount of time that it does take to run a league. You know, anybody can throw up a league and, you know, not get involved in Discord and not get involved in broadcasting and just, you know, run it and then, you know, it falls off. It takes a long time to generate interest. Even when you get a bunch of guys that said they love racing, you got to keep them interested. And, you know, but hanging out on the, watching what goes on the Discord channel here and then over at Midwest Motorsports, it's like a community. You know, there's always somebody on there talking racing, always somebody on these channels talking about stuff. So, yeah, he's definitely got a good thing going, and especially the payouts every week as well as the monthly money races. It's definitely a unique situation. Are you guys, either one of you, going to run in the money race next month?
Possibly. You got to have a team, don't you? I don't know how.
Yeah,
I don't know if you have to have up to four drivers, or can you run us two? Or we run the money race inside, just the regular money races. We've never done a team event, so
yeah, it's a team.
I'm not sure how different the team event's going to be.
It's a team of four cars. You got to have four.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess me and Dylan got to get our checkbook out and pay for two other guys to come run with us. So
either that or drive
big money. He's the big money over there, you know. He's got the loads. His pockets are sitting there. He ain't got empty hands, I can tell you that.
If I believe, you're the only one to win one of these of us two, so
well, if it's going to be two of you, just drive twice as fast and lap everybody.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, anything else you want to say here before we move on to the results and the points for the season?
No. Not at all. Thank you.
Yep.
For putting this on for us. Thank you for coming on and having us on, me and Dylan. I know Dylan's the real chatty one. I have to do all the talking for him. He never keys up on the mic. It's like this every night hanging around him. It's just like, Dylan. So having to talk to you, at least I have somebody that talks back to me, Mr. Greg. So. Yeah, thank you for putting us on. Thank you again to
Justin
and everything he's doing for Rolling Thunder.
Yep.
If there's people out there watching and maybe listening later, and I hope you guys will come and check it out.
Yeah, because
since Daniel's the one talking for me, I guess, you know, just ditto to whatever he said.
There you go. You could just, like, you know, key up and put the, you know, the okay sign or ditto on the chat, and I'll just pick it up that way. No,
my interpreter.
Yeah, it's funny because just about, I think I've only had one person that came on from our other league, and he was a good old Southern boy about my age, and always in the league. He's always talking. He comes on the podcast for that league, the 802 Cup Series, and he's like, I really don't like talking on a microphone, so I don't know how long I'm going to be on. I'm going, that's cool. But just about everybody else, you know, the race people, they love to talk. I did 6 years of talk radio down the line here a little bit, so I'm kind of used to jabbing and jawing on a microphone and stuff like that. So, Daniel Eberhardt, congratulations on your win at Watkins Glen. Dylan Jones, second place. And thanks for coming on, and I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
Later.
That was Daniel Eberhardt, the winner of Watkins Glen, the driver of the car 90, talking about all his life in racing. And just like, you know, if you're good at basketball, you don't need a $300 pair of sneakers to play basketball. Here it is. He's talking about running the same, almost the same wheel that I have, which is, you know, the entry level. And hey, it just shows if you got the talent, you don't need the expensive goods. And Dylan Jones, driver of car number 3 in the Rolling Thunder Racing Series, coming in P2 at Watkins Glen, and they'll be both racing this coming weekend at Atlanta. Speaking of Watkins Glen, let's take a look at the top 10 finishers for week 3 in Rolling Thunder. And all the races are broadcast on Global Sim Racing Channel, including the money races. So you can look up Global Sim Racing Channel if you want to catch the money races and the weekly Sunday night series of Rolling Thunder Racing Series. Well, first place was number 90. We just chatted with him about that, Daniel Eberhart III. Second place driver in car number 3, Dylan Jones. He finished 14.372 seconds behind Eberhart. P3 to round out the podium, driver car 69, Randall Nichols. Fourth place was Matthew Molnar. He drives number 29. Fifth place went to a guest that was on last week, Colin Weatherhart, in the car number 20. P6 went to Scott Trump. He drives car 11, Ryan M. Johnson, in car number 38. He finished in seventh place. Jacob Manning finished in eighth place, driving car number 9. The number one car, Trevor C. Williams, finished in ninth and rounding out the top 10 at Watkins Glen this past week for week 3 of the Rolling Thunder Racing Series was Matthew Robinson. And speaking of points, we're going to check the points for week 3. These are the official standings of Rolling Thunder Racing Series. In first place, Colin Weatherholt. He's got 80 points. And right behind him is a big, tough battle here for like the top 5 or 6 spots. P2 is Daniel Eberhart. He's got 1 win on the season. He's got 79 points. Jason Manns is in P3. He has 1 win on the season. He's got 71 points. Randall Nichols also has 71 points in P4. P5 with 1 win was last week's guest, Jared Mogard. He's in P5 with 70 points. And right behind him, Matthew Molnar with 68 points is in P6. P7 is Scott Crump with 65 points. Seth Reed is in P8, also with 65 points. P9 is Matthew Robinson with 64 points. And Ryan Johnson with 64, rounding out the top 10 after week 3. P11 is Drew Ballesteros. He's got 63 points. Jacob Manning in P12 with 62 points. Dylan Jones is in 13th place with 61 points, 19 points out of first. Luke Smith is in P14 with 60. 15th is Michael Larch with 58 points. Trevor Williams is in 16th position with 54 points after 3 weeks of racing. 17th place, Dean Gagliano with 47 points. And right behind him, in another tight battle towards the back of the pack, Lane Doyle with 46 points is in 18th. P19th is Joshua Suss with 45 points. 42 points is Jordan Berube. He's in P20. Brenton Barker is in P21 with 39 points. Sean Corcoran is in P22 with 34 points. Also, Darwin Hansen has 34 points. P24 is Bo Tiffany with 27 points. 25th is John Ellis Jr. with 21. P26 is Jared Haynes with 21 points. And 27th is William Schwindenhammer with 18 points. And that's after 3 weeks of racing before we head to Atlanta this Sunday. Special event coming up, and you only got a couple weeks left to register. You got to get on this before November 1st. This is the Battle of the Teams $1,000 prize, winner takes all. Teams of 4 drivers. Entry fee is $125. Fixed setups. It's an 85-lap race at Daytona in the Gen 4 cars. 75% fuel. 2 tires in the pits. No quick repairs. The independent race control. The race will be broadcast by Global Sim Racing Channel. Now, the winning team's not who finishes first. It's the total points accumulated by all 4 drivers. That's the key. It's not like the chase in NASCAR. You got 4 drivers and they just got to finish up there. It's all 4 drivers. Their points are added up, and the team with the highest points wins the total purse, $1,000. Now, if there's a tie, what's going to happen there is if there's a tie for first place with all 4 cars having the same amount of points at the end of the race, the highest placing driver amongst those teams tied wins the tiebreaker. So again, may not be one of those things where you got to win the race, but it certainly will help. So winning is decided by accumulated points for all 4 drivers, and if there's a tie, the highest finishing driver will be the tiebreaker. And it's the Battle of the Teams on November 16th. Room opens at 6 p.m. Qualifying at 6:50 p.m. Green flag at 7. And the deadline to enter is coming up quick. And if you want some more information on the Battle of the Teams, $1,000 winner takes it all at Daytona on November 16th, go to RollingThunderRacingSeries.com and get all the information. And again, it's $1,000 to the team that wins. It's $125 a team to enter. So it's a big payoff, a great payday. So make sure if you're interested, you get your team together and get on over to RollingThunderRacingSeries.com and sign up for the Battle of the Teams. Next race in the Rolling Thunder Racing Series is coming up on Sunday night, October 22nd. It will be Atlanta at the 2008 track, and that's 132 laps. So the old track at Atlanta coming up this weekend, and we talked about how tires might be an issue there, and a lot of strategies going on. And that's this Sunday for the Rolling Thunder Racing Series Gen 4 schedule, Atlanta on Sunday the 22nd. And that also will be broadcast on Global Sim Racing Channel. So this is the Burn 'Em Down podcast for week 3. And the Burning Down podcast is produced by the Sim Racing Podcast. We also do a couple other leagues and just a regular Sim Racing podcast. So if you're listening, hey, join the Rolling Thunder Racing Series, win a race, and come on and talk to me here. And if you're not in the series and you want to talk racing, give me a holler and we'll get you on the podcast. And every one of their events is broadcast by the Global Sim Racing Channel. The Burn 'Em Down podcast with Greg Dreiss, your host, that's me, is produced by the Sim Racing Podcast for Rolling Thunder Racing Series. And it's available on Twitch live right now, and it'll be uploaded to YouTube. The video and the audio, or it'll stay forever. Also on Spotify, and we're also on all the major podcast platforms, including Google, Amazon, and we're on TuneIn. And early next year, we'll also be on SiriusXM. Twitch channel is twitch.tv/Greg Dreiss. YouTube is at the Sim Racing Podcast Greg Dreiss. And Spotify, podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/Joe Sixpack Racing. I want to thank everybody for listening. It's been a lot of fun doing the series, and thanks to Justin for letting me do the podcast for him. Good luck, everybody, this weekend, and please don't forget the Battle of the Teams on November 16th, a chance to win $1,000 for first prize. Stay in your lane. Keep your tires clean, and until then, have yourself a great week, and we'll see you on the track.